I was just kind of thinking about a couple things, I guess, just about the nature of God and then the creation of God and the fall of man, and kind of just in my heart, I was going back to the beginning and had kind of an inward view of the Lord's, just like a tiny little bit, I'm sure, of a view of the Lord's purpose and his nature and what happened with man in the beginning. For some reason, I think it's a very, very good reason, actually, but these last few years, I feel like the Lord often brings my heart back to the beginning of man, the creation of man. And I think that it's by a big part of knowing God and experiencing God and experiencing what God wants to do in our hearts and in our lives comes from a knowledge, a real knowledge, not a book knowledge, but a real knowledge of what actually, like who God is and what happened, why things are in the state that they're in now. I think it's not hard to look around at the world today and see and feel in so many different ways that things aren't as they should be. And but to understand really what God desires and why things are the way that they are and what it means to find our way back to a God, finding ourselves in this condition, finding ourselves in a condition where our hearts and our lives in so many ways have gone apart, gone out from God, gone away from God, and are separated from him and who he is. All of that to me brings me back to the beginning, brings me back to understanding the fall of man. Well, first the nature of God, and then like the fall of man. And the more I feel like the more I see and understand those things, the more I also see and understand how to return, how to come back from that, come out of that fall and follow him in the way that he has opened for us back into the experience of his nature and his purpose. And yeah, I guess if you were to ask me why God created, I think there's a really clear and really good reason why God created. I don't think it's a mystery. No one probably sees the fullness of it, but it's not something we just have to throw up our hands and say, I have no idea about. There's a really good and clear reason why I think God created, a reason that we can back up with thousands of scriptures and a whole lot of personal experience too. And I think the main reason, or if I had to put two words to it, two words to describe why God created, one of them is the word love, and the other one is the word glory. And I think maybe a better way to expand on that a little bit, I think that God decided that, well, God is, in his nature, a will to share all goodness. That's what God is. He is all goodness. He is all righteousness and all truth and all life and all joy and all wisdom. Everything that is truly good is God. Those words don't actually define God. God defines those words, if you understand what I mean. You can't study those 10 words, whatever I just said, and then think you understand God. You have to know God, and then you can start to understand righteousness and wisdom and life and truth. Do you understand what I mean? And God is like he's the substance, he's the essence of all that is good. And love is the nature that God is and has, a nature that always is looking to give and share goodness, share all that is good and right and lovely and beautiful and joyful, and that's who he is. That's not just one of the things that he likes to do in his spare time. That's really the nature of God's heart. It's to give goodness, to share goodness. He's a will that will towards giving goodness. I don't know how to say it very well, and I see that and feel that sometimes too, to be the nature of God. When I feel like I am most aware of God's presence and God's nature, I feel that aspect of who he is. And it doesn't really matter that I feel it, or if you can feel it, it doesn't change it. It's there. It's what he is. It's why he created. It's demonstrated and manifested in thousands of verses and in millions of dealings with humanity. He is sunlight that shines upon the righteous and the wicked. He is rain that falls upon the crops of the righteous and the wicked. He is the giving of goodness and love. Again, love isn't like human love, is a desire to take things that we find attractive to ourselves. But divine love is very much the opposite. And it is a desire, or it is a nature that wants to share and communicate and give and pour out goodness to man. And so if you ask why God created the world, I think the real heart of it is love. It is because God, if you want to say it this way, burns or is a living flame of love, that he burns with that desire to have a creation into which to share himself. And that is really, that's what he is. That's what he is, and that's what he does. And the way that he does it is by giving life, because only in the experience of his life can you experience his good. You know, you can't live apart from his life and experience his goodness. That doesn't work. If you separate yourself from his life, you're separating yourself from his goodness. So the way that he loves is by giving life, and the life that he gives is the person of his son. And I'm getting off my projected path here that I feel, but just to maybe say that again clearly, the love of God shares himself, and the way that he shares himself isn't just giving a bunch of things that aren't his life. Because then you'd have to be something else, something apart from his life, and you couldn't experience those things. It's like trying to give a box of golden jewelry to a chicken, or that's a weird example, but it's you can't give something that's valuable. You can't give pearls to swine. That's a better one. Jesus mentioned that one. He can't communicate himself in love without communicating his own life, because it's only by his life that we experience his goodness. It's never separate. Do you see what I'm saying? Like real goodness. There's shadows of goodness in outward things. There's shadows. A pig can experience a good meal, and in a sense, there's a shadow of goodness because there's something coming in and helping him stay alive, and it's kind of like an outward picture of eating and drinking Christ. But real goodness is always perfectly connected and united to life, and you can't if you refuse the life, you refuse the goodness. And here's another way to say it: if you refuse the life, you refuse the love. You see, you can't refuse life and still experience the love of God, because everything about the goodness that God's trying to give you is in the life. If you have the life, you have the goodness. You have the love. If you have the Son, you have the life. And if you have the life, then at least to some degree, to some measure, you have something of that goodness. Now, that's what that means, and how that grows, and how that needs to grow, and how it's very, how that life comes to us in a very small condition, a small state, and is in danger of being snuffed out by all kinds of other things in this creation that are contrary to it, is a whole another subject, one that we've talked about before. But I want you to see, I want you to feel, I want you to know that God is love, and that really, honestly, love is God, or that the word. When I say that, I say that that way, again, because to say that God is love can sometimes let us define love and then say God is like that. But to say that love is God is a little bit more like saying love is something we don't know. And when we come to really know love, the giving of all goodness in a life, then we know something of God. And so God created man because he desires to create, to have a creation, to have a living vessel, to have a universe that receives goodness and that manifests goodness, which is the second word, glory. Glory is just, when you think of glory, don't think of just like shiny stuff. Think of the manifestation or the seeing and experiencing of goodness, like putting goodness on display. If you think about it, everything that we like and love and appreciate about this creation is because is goodness put on display. It might not be the substance of goodness, it might be shadows of goodness. And when I say shadows, I don't mean dark, spooky things. I mean just things that aren't actually the substance. Like when you see the sunrise in the morning, there's something about it that's, oh, that's so amazing. It's beautiful, it's colorful, it's changing the view of everything. Everything's needing it, everything's taking its energy, taking its light, walking in its light, living in its light. There's something so good, so beautiful about a sunrise. What is it that's good about it? Well, it's a little bit of God's goodness put on display. That's called glory. God's goodness manifested. God glorifies himself in the creation that he made. And the things that really manifest or express aspects of his goodness, of his beauty, of his truth, of his wisdom, those things make us marvel at what's behind them or what created them or what's in them. You know, we marvel at those things because they put on display, they put into like a showcase the love of God. And the more you have a heart that is freed from all the trappings of fleshly desires and selfish love and pride and all the slimy stuff that gets piled up on top of our human heart, the more you get freed from that, the more you actually are free to see those things in creation. I'm sure that some of you have noticed that going on in your hearts in the last few years, number of years, as the Lord has dealt with you to remove all the wicked layers of filth that are lying on top of the human heart. I will bet there are some people in this room or listening that have noticed a strange appreciation that almost brings tears to your eyes sometimes of seeing goodness in creation, seeing things that, and feeling maybe you've had this experience too, where you look at something in creation and you kind of feel a little bit of what's behind it, and you marvel at it, and you stare at it, and you know you've walked by it 1,000 times and never noticed it, but this time you're looking at it, whether it's sun shining off of leaves, or whether it's wind blowing through your yard, or whether it's a little caterpillar that's ugly but is going to turn into something beautiful. And this time you're looking at it and you're saying, oh, there's something amazing and good in this. There's something powerful and beautiful and wise, and I know what it is. At least I know a little bit of it. I know it's the one who's behind all goodness. It's the will that desires to share goodness. It's the living, powerful goodness himself wanting to cause a creation to not only receive goodness, but to express goodness and manifest goodness, right? So again, when I think of God, when I think of God's reason for creating man, I think and feel, when I have sensitivity, I don't always have spiritual sensitivity. I wish I did. I sometimes feel more numb, or things are harder to see and feel, and for various reasons. Some of them I understand and some of them I don't. But when I can feel God, I feel him and see him to be all love and a will to give himself. And everything that God does in this creation, and everything that God does in your heart, and everything that he wants to do right now, today, is what's behind it. I don't know how it's going to manifest. It might actually manifest like pain, okay? Because for lots of reasons, the cross, death to self, pain, difficulties and trials, are necessary to get us back to a place where we can feel God. But I can tell you this, like, whatever you experience today, what's behind it, even if it means difficulties, trials, tribulations, and the cross, what's behind it is the same thing. A will that desires to share goodness. A will that desires to give everything that is good. And he'll give it as much as we're able to take it. And the only reason we can't take it is because we're taking other things instead of it. That's the only reason that anything in creation has ever fallen short of the goodness of God. It's because we have loved things that aren't good, and taken things that aren't good, and pursued things that aren't good for selfish reasons. That's what man does. He loves. He turns from the source of good, and he turns away from it. And that's what happened. And then again, to get back to like the big picture of who God is and what happened. Who God is what I've been trying to say. And what he did was for that reason. He created because he wanted you to receive his goodness. And not only that, to glorify goodness by experiencing it and enjoying it forever. That is so awesome. That reminds me of a verse in Ephesians 2, I think. Yeah. 2:5. Even when we were dead. Okay, 4. But God, who is rich in mercy, because of his great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved. And raised us up together and made us sit together in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. And here's the big verse 7 is the why. Why did he do it? What was behind it? What was motivating all that he just said? that in the ages to come he might show the exceeding riches of his grace in kindness towards us in Christ Jesus. There's the why. If that doesn't reach your heart right now, I hope it will someday soon, and just let you feel that that's God. Everything that hurts, everything that's hard, every tribulation that we're supposed to take great joy in is only because God is trying to get us back to a condition where we can receive goodness, where we can receive and experience and magnify and glorify goodness. And that's love. And you know what? When we begin to love with God's love, it's the same thing. We begin to desire to give goodness and share goodness. And we begin to feel, we tap into that stream, because he is a stream. He's a big stream. He's like Niagara Falls. He's a powerful stream of goodness flowing. And when we begin to get some of the flesh that always pulls the opposite direction out of our heart and looks out for ourselves and wants our own way and wants to criticize and wants to attack, and when that begins to get out of the way by the cross of Christ, then you begin to feel in little bits at a time and growing. First it's just a little tiny trickle, a little dribble, and then it's a little bit more, and then maybe a little bit more, and then it goes away for a few months and you wonder what happened and what you did, and then he comes back, and then I don't know how to describe it exactly. I'm describing some of my experiences. But what it is that same thing. It's a sense of desiring goodness to all, that everyone, it doesn't seek its own, it hopes that everyone, it believes that it wants everyone to receive goodness. You see, it's kind, it's good, it's loving, it never keeps record of wrongs. Why would it do that? It only wants to give. That's what Paul says, some things like that about it. It's what it is. And when it's in you, when it's working in you, it's just a little slice of him. And you feel it to be his nature. And you know that the only way you could possibly love someone else really is to help them find the life in which all goodness is found. Now, see, you could try to love them in another way by giving them all kinds of good things and good toys and good possessions and good educations. But if you miss helping them find their way into the life that is the place of all goodness and the source of all goodness, then you see, you're missing the love. If you give everything except for, if you help someone in every way except for helping them find the life in which the goodness is experienced, then you've fallen short of the true love. Because real love, as we've talked about before, the love of God loves Jacob and hates Esau. What I mean by that is it loves that life, and it doesn't love, it helps to free you from everything that gets in the way of that life. That's what it means in Malachi 1 when God's talking about loving Jacob and hating Esau. True love has to hate or turn against or desire to free you from and liberate you from everything that is a obstacle and a hindrance in your experience of that. Of that love, of that life. But anyway, that's off my subject. But God is love. And he created because he wanted to pour goodness into a creation and then watch goodness spring up in this creation. You are a field. You are you're like a giant farm. Your heart is. The world is too. I mean, the outward world, we see it in the outward world. In fact, I had this verse open because I thought we've read it before, but it's where he says, "Rain down, you heavens from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. Let the earth open up and let them bring forth salvation. Let righteousness spring up together. Salvation and righteousness spring up together. I, the Lord, have created it. Rain down, you heavens, from above. Let the skies pour down righteousness. Let the earth open. Let them bring forth salvation and let righteousness spring up together. That's God. That's what he's doing. He's like a big rainfall. He's the heavens pouring down righteousness with the hope and with the anticipation that our earth will open and receive it. And then when our earth opens and receives it, then salvation and righteousness spring up together. We spring up in that same nature, and that is our salvation. You see, that's what salvation is. It's opening up and receiving righteousness. It's opening up and letting him bring us back to an experience, a living experience of who he is and what he is and what he's always been. And the fall of man, the reason that, and I guess I maybe won't have a lot of time to get into this, but I kind of wanted to set the stage by saying all that because it's so important to understand what it is and who it is we have fallen from. Because if God is that heaven's pouring down righteousness, and the only thing that keeps us from experiencing it and being like a ground that receives the rain and springs up with fruits and vegetables of righteousness, if the only thing that keeps us from experiencing that is that our hearts are so hard that the rain falls on a rock and nothing happens. It just rolls right off, you know? If that's the only reason, then we can understand something about our problem. And we can understand something about what it means to come back. What it means to come back to God and what we need to experience. Man, in his foolishness and in his blindness, in the beginning turned away from that purpose. He turned away from that God. You know, something inside of you might want to say, why in the world did he do that? And that same question applies to you and I today. Why in the world do we do it? Why do we do it? Haven't we seen and felt and read and heard and known, to some extent at least, that God is this way? Why do we turn away from him? Well, there's something in man that has that ability and has that ability to be deceived. And what is that deception? It's the great deception. We've talked about it before, but I'm going to say it again. It's the deception that goodness, something of goodness, is somewhere else, is to be found somewhere else apart from God. That's something of love. That's something of goodness. That's something of wisdom. That's something of purpose can be found somewhere else in something apart from God. See, the world is like a big, it's like a big field, or you could say it's like a big canvas. It's a big canvas, and God began to paint on the canvas all the glories and beauties of who he is and what he is. And man can turn towards the painter and receive the paint. Or man, in his foolishness, can turn towards the canvas, you could say, and refuse the paint. And that's exactly what Adam and Eve did. They turned away. They turned towards the canvas. They turned towards the... Instead of instead of experiencing the creation of God as the place where goodness and love would be manifested, they turn to the creation of God as the source of goodness and love and wisdom. They turn towards, and that's what that tree is, that tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's what it represents. It represents another source. It represents another goodness. They looked at it. They said, it's good for making me wise. It's good for food. It's good. It's there it is. It's good. And they turned. And they turned from the nature of God. And they turned to it. And they began to feed upon it. And in so doing, they began to lose. They began to lose their sense and their sight of that life in which all goodness was found. They died to it. They lost it. I don't want to talk too much or try to go too far. But maybe just to conclude by saying that everything that God has since done for man, everything that God is doing for you and with you today, no matter what it feels like, God's work, though it is very often the experience of a cross, though it is very often the experience of repentance, turning back, though it is very often means his dealings and his fatherly chastisements, everything that God is doing, he hasn't changed his nature. He hasn't changed his purpose. He hasn't changed what he is or what he desires to do. The only thing that has changed in creation is that part of his creation went away from him and now has to come back. The only thing that happened was that man separated himself by sin, that is to say, another will, another source, another kind of food, turning away from God. And then by doing so, filled himself with another nature, another spirit, darkness, and now he must return. And everything about God's dealing with man is that. That's what Jesus Christ is. He is the return of all goodness. He is the gift, not just the outward coming of Christ in the body, but the inward coming of Christ. The outward coming of Christ was so that you could have Christ inwardly experienced as life and righteousness and wisdom and truth and all goodness. He is the goodness of God. He is the good shepherd. He's the good everything. He is the wisdom of God, the power of God, the righteousness of God. And everything that God has done and is doing in the history of mankind has been with the intention of bringing man back into a place where he can receive goodness, receive love, abide in love, walk in love, walk in the love of God, and manifest and glorify the love of God. Everything from the very beginning. And from the very beginning, God began to talk about that and began to give pictures. And this is what the Old Testament is. That's what the New Testament is too. But so many people misunderstand the Old Testament because he began to talk to them about giving back a seed of life, and that everything was in the seed, and that the blessings were in the seed, and that the inheritance was in the seed, and that the increase was in the seed, and that the victory was in the seed, and that the harvest was in the seed. And that's the way he started to deal with Adam and Eve in the beginning, and then Abraham and all the patriarchs. It was all about a seed. It was about giving back another life and experiencing the growth and the increase of the life in which we find and experience the love. And everything was that. And then there was a separating of the seed from the other seed. And that's the whole story of Egypt, the Exodus. It was pulling one seed out of another seed, separating it, making it separate so that we only experience the one and we stop experiencing the thing that we fell into. And the whole Old Testament, maybe some of these days I'll talk more about some of those pictures in more detail. And I could easily just kind of go off in those subjects, and I feel more like the Lord is kind of wanting to make sure that we all know that he is love and that he is good and that his purposes are to give goodness, and that the way that he does it is to give his son. And his son is the goodness because his son is the life. where all goodness is found. And the way that that happens is by planting in the midst of a contrary world, a contrary nature inside of us, a gift of that seed. And if we just would turn to it and let it grow and let it fill us, we'd be right back in the beginning where every day was about receiving goodness and glorifying goodness. If we just would make that our portion and make that our purpose and make that our life and give that our attention and make this life be about going back, returning to the Father, returning to the original experience of God. If we would just make that be what we're about every day, then this whole, everything we experience, every pain, every trial, every disappointment, every confusion, every tribulation, every anguish, every fear we have can be a step in the right direction in returning to our Father. Everything we experience can be either a way of departing further and further into darkness, death, and self, or returning and leaving those things behind and coming back to the Father's house that we left behind. And what's the Father's house? It's just the experience of a God who is 100% love. Yeah, maybe let's read one more little psalm here. You visit the earth, talking about the Lord, obviously. This is talking about his awesome deeds in the earth. And he says, and you visit the earth and water it. You greatly enrich it. And I love the next verse. The river of God is full of water. You visit the earth and you water it. You greatly enrich it. The river of God is full of water. You provide their grain, for so you have prepared it. You water its ridges abundantly. You settle its furrows. You make it soft with showers, and you bless its growth. Lord, do that in me. That's my prayer. The river of God is full of water. It's not half full of water and half full of anger. It's full of water. And he does, and he provides grain. He provides seed. You see? And he's prepared it all. And so he waters the ridges abundantly and settles its furrows and makes it soft with showers. And then blesses its growth. You crown the year with your goodness, and your paths drip with abundance. They drop on the pastures of the wilderness, and the little hills rejoice on every side. The pastures are clothed with flocks. The valleys also are covered with grain, and they shout for joy and sing. That's the last five verses of Psalm 66. So neat. All right.